the providence of God. When you take into consideration what providence is an event, I'll read a definition, an event or circumstance ascribable to divine interposition. And then things that happen to us, we oftentimes quote the scripture in Romans, the 8th chapter, 28th verse, that says, all things, we know, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are the called according to his purpose. So we have to understand that everything that happens to us, God has a purpose in that happening. And if we could see the bigger plan of it, then we wouldn't complain about the things that happen to us. He did not say that good things that happen to us would work together for our good. He didn't say that, did he? He said that all things, no matter what the situation is, no matter what, how terrible it may seem, no matter how unfair it may seem, God is working that for our good. It's his divine providence. We wouldn't have chosen those things for ourselves. None of us would have. There are many, many things that we all go through on a daily basis that if we had control over the situation, we would do something quite different. But because we don't, we realize that all the things that have taken place up to this point, God had his hand in. And now when we really see that and we really believe that, then we have no right to complain about all the things that happen to us. We have no right to complain when people don't like us, when people do things that offend us. We have no right to do that if we believe that scripture. Now, if we don't believe that scripture, then we have every right to complain about it because we realize that, God, this life just isn't fair. It doesn't seem like they should have done these things to me, and these things that are happening to me just aren't right. Anybody here, well, let's just put it this way. All of us can say the things that happened to us that aren't right. We can say that people that meant well did some things that they should not have done, and it caused me a lot of heartache. I can say that. And we can say people that meant ill have done some things against me, and it's caused me heartache. But God said that all of those things would work together for our good if we love God. If we don't love him, then that's a different story. It's not going to work. There has to be all of these ingredients. And if I love the Lord, then I'm going to believe that God only has the best for me. And that there is something that he's working in my character to change something about me or to give me a debt, something that he's trying to get over to me that I need to get a hold of, right? All right, now, the divine providence, the things that God, that are out of our control, that God allows to happen to us, they ask us a question. All right? Our response answers that question. So in other words, God is saying in the divine providence that the things that he's allowing to happen to us, he's saying, will you still trust me? And our response, whatever that response is the answer to that question. Will you still, when they do these things, will you still love them? And your response answers that question. These are the things that God is asking us in his divine providence. And ultimately, there is a bigger picture that we understand that is his purpose. But there are questions that he asks us in the midst of all the things that happen to us. We may not have heard them very clearly, but we're answering those questions. So we're answering, when these people do these kinds of things to me, how are you going to respond to them? Will you trust God in the midst of it? Well, Lord, I don't know if I can trust you anymore. I had somebody to say that. I've been praying, and it just doesn't seem like God is answering my prayers. And so your response to whatever it is that God does answers the question that God is asking in that situation. All right? A lot of folks that do that. Well, there folks offend you. You know, sometimes I've said this to people. Oh, I've offended a lot of people. I really have. And I didn't know I was offending them when I did it. I don't feel like, you know, there have been times, I cannot say, I'm not going to try to say, live way up here if I'm not there. There have probably been times that I've said some things and I intended for it to sting a little bit. And I said it and I wanted them to know where I was coming from, maybe to get off my foot. You've been stepping on my shoe for a long time and I'm ready for you to get off. I've done that. And I've had to go back and I've had to apologize. And I had to ask the Lord to forgive me for those kinds of things. But I want to say that the majority of the time, probably 95 to 90-something percent of the time that I've offended people, and I've deeply wounded some, I didn't do it on purpose. It was completely ignorant. And I've hurt them, and I go and try to straighten it up. But do you realize, why did you allow this me to even do this? Well, the Lord said, I'm trying to get something over to you, and I'm trying to get something over to them as well. And so the question that the Lord asks, are you going to be humble enough when you make this mistake? Are you going to be humble enough to go and pour your heart out to Him and try to amend the things? Are you going to be humble enough? And my response is, well, they shouldn't have done it to me. Is that what my response should be? Well, they got what was coming to them. Or is my, one of, we're going to do some kind of response. My response is, Lord, I'm sorry, I really didn't mean to do it, and I'll do whatever I have to make up to you. All right? And so that I get a response out of it. The one that has offended has a response, whether or not they're willing to humble themselves. And the person that was inadvertently offended, they have a response as well. The Lord allowed that to happen to you. I want you to understand it. It wasn't just that this brother or this sister just did something. They were ignorant. Maybe they were. But God allowed it to happen. Now, what is your response to what God is asking? Are you going to forgive them? Are you willing to forgive? I don't know. That's what we say. Not with our words, but with our actions. And let me tell you, I've learned something. I've learned that it is not easy to forgive. It's easy to say it. It's much easier to say it with the lips than it is to say it with the heart. And there are times that we have forgiven. We say, Lord, I'm willing to forgive this situation. And we said it with our lips. We thought we said it with our heart. But there is something that just keeps coming back. And it just keeps affecting me. Every time I hear this name or every time this happens, it affects me. So you know what that tells me? That tells me you haven't truly forgiven. You can say what you want to, but the response is that you have not truly forgiven what that person did. And the providence was that there is a depth. We've been talking about a depth of love. A depth, Lord, give me a double portion of love and that kind of thing. That's what we need, the divine love of God. Because some of these things that we deal with are much deeper. They're not going to happen just on what the little love that I have. They just won't happen. I found that out the hard way. So I've had to go to the Lord and I had to beg the Lord. Lord, give me the love that I need. Give me the ability to forgive the deep hurt that I've. And let me tell you, most of the time, the people that we offend have offend us, and they, for some reason, they don't think that they have. All right, we're gonna get some Bible on this. All right, don't want to just give Brother Darrell's opinion. Let's go to 37. There, Genesis, the 37th chapter. I want to begin reading at the third verse. We're going to skip around and kind of get the picture here. Now, keep in mind that we're speaking about the providence of God and what God orchestrates our lives. Do you believe that? Do you believe that God really orchestrates your life and everything that happens has to pass through Him first? Can I establish that as the foundation? Because if we don't believe that, then everything that we're going to say is not going to make a whole lot of sense. But if we believe that God is in control, that He fashions the hearts of men, that He puts everything in place and orchestrates the setting of your life, where you were born, the city that you were raised in, the people that come in contact with you, they're not just, we heard a little bit about this last night, they're not just inadvertently happen. God has a plan. All right? We don't see the plan. I believe that if we could zoom out and we could look at our lives from the end to all the way back, then I think it would make a little bit more sense than it makes right now. All right? Thank you. But we don't have the opportunity to do that, do we? We don't have the opportunity to come to a place that we can zoom out of our lives and look. But we have an opportunity in Scripture to zoom out, look at individuals' lives from the back all the way to the time that it was happening. And I want us to understand that as these things were happening, they didn't know what the end would be. All right? Look at Job. Job did not know that things would be better off in the end than they were at the beginning. He was just going through everyday motions, dealing with the providence and the circumstances of his life. We're going to talk a little bit about Joseph here. Joseph didn't know what was going on. He didn't know what was going on, but at the beginning, but we can see the end. And so we have to say that if it happened to Joseph, and Joseph was a man of like passion as I am, then chances are the things that are happening to me are going to ultimately be for my good, just like it was for Joseph, just like it was for Job, just like it was for every other person in the history, that we can look back and see the things that the Lord has recorded in His Scriptures that help us to understand that these individuals, God was taking them somewhere. All right, let's go to the 37th chapter of Psalms. I start reading at the third verse. Read 3 through 5, please. Genesis. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm saying Psalms. All right. Genesis.
Now Israel loved Joseph more than all.
Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children.
He
was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors.
And when his brethren saw that their father,
loved them more, all his brethren hated him, and they could not speak peaceably.
And Joseph dreamed a dream,
and told it his brother, and they hated him yet more. Now here is the beginning of this. First of all, we realize, and most of us as fathers, mothers, and parents, we know not to show favoritism to our children, don't we? And we know that, you know, well, somebody can say, well, mom always loved and catered to so-and-so. And I've heard that kind of people saying that my mother and father catered to such. You know, it's a little easier to love somebody that's obedient than it is somebody that's hard-headed. That's just natural, all right? You take a little child that's just so sweet and he's just so loving, and then you take one that's always, you're out having a drag and all this. It takes something extra to have the same kind of a love for that child as it does for a child that's just, go do something. Yes, ma'am. It's a little different, isn't it? Now, it does not mean that a parent should love the obedient child more than he loves the child that's not so obedient. And that's something that God has to help us to work through, right? And the Lord has to give us some divine love that we don't show favoritism. And it's not, things are on an even keel, or that child will grow up, the children will grow up with a resentment. So here we can say Israel was not a very wise man in this respect. Because this young Joseph was a son of his old age, and it was special to him. And he showed it, and it wasn't any secret to anybody that this boy was special, and his brothers hated it. But again, we must understand that it's God's divine providence. God himself realized, he knew how Israel was going to respond. He knew all of that, and God had a purpose in it. Even his brothers hating him. Now, I want you to understand something. The problem that we're going to see as we go on down through this little lesson here, we're going to find out that it was his brothers that got him into the situation. If you want to go on back, it goes all the way back to his father. Had his father not showed favoritism to Joseph, maybe his brothers wouldn't have hated him so much. All right, so let's say the father's at fault. Let's just say he's wrong for doing that. All right, can we say that and be and not take anything away from the story? All right, so that was them, but yet that was the father's fault in one sense. Then Joseph and his brothers, but let me tell you something about his brothers. Well, my father's showing favoritism. Does that give me the right to hate somebody? Because somebody else is doing something wrong? And let's talk about Joseph. Joseph understands that his father loved, and then he has this dream. God gives him a dream. And his dream is that, I had this dream. And brothers, I want you to, I think Joseph understood to some degree that his brothers had a little animosity against him. We know those kinds of things. But he said, you know, I had this dream, and I was, and y'all were bowing down to me. Now, what was that going to do to his brother? Now, we could say that Joseph was a little bit ignorant. He was a little bit naive, and he thought that they were going to, I don't know what all this is about, but God did that, so whose fault is that? God gave him that dream, and we'll find out as we go on in the lesson that it was a God-given dream. Now, whether or not he should have expressed it to his brothers and told them about it is a different story. We would have probably said, you know what, Joseph, you need to use a little bit of wisdom. You know that they don't like you in the first place. But what we're talking about is the providence of God. We're talking about what God has done, not what Joseph is doing. A lot of mistakes that Joseph made, that Israel made, that the brothers made, is actually for a benefit to not just them, but to the whole world, so to speak. All of Egypt, all of Canaan. But it's set. The stage is set here, and we understand that we are in real time here. Joseph is in real time. He's not looking at this from a historical standpoint. He's looking at this in real time. So as we look at our trials and the tests and the issues and the problems that we go through, we look at them in real time. If we could see them from the back and look back on it, then it would be a little easier for us, wouldn't it? Because we realize what God is doing, but we don't know that. We have to simply trust. All right? Okay, drop down to the 18th verse. Okay, so let me say this. His father made him a coat of many colors. We pulled that out, right? We talked about that, right? Okay, verse 3. He made him a coat of many colors. So he did something a little special for Joseph. I want you to take into consideration this coat that Joseph has. This coat got him in trouble. And another coat got him in trouble. All right? Let's go a little further. 18.
And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him.
Okay, his brothers are out in the field. For the sake of time, we won't go through all the story. But his brothers are out in the field, and his father is sending Joseph to find a checkup on his brothers. All right? They saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them. Read. They conspired against him to slay him. They said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him. Now, hold on. Who is this talking? His brothers. His brothers. His blood. These are people that are supposed to love him. These are his big brothers that are supposed to protect their little brother. I had some big brothers, and they protected me. They loved me. I didn't have any issue. But because of the way mom and daddy handled them, Joseph, I'm not talking about my big brothers. My parents were pretty on an even keel. I kind of think they liked me a little bit more than the rest of them, but that's okay. I can do that if I want to. All right, go. Read, please.
Come now, therefore, and let us
slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands, and said, Let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father. I don't know what the dynamics were of this family, but it was something about these men were very much underhanded. And so Reuben realized that he had to use a little wisdom. He's an older brother. And he realized that he's got to use wisdom in order to get it out up, because if he comes in here and he starts arguing with them right now, it's just not going to work. So let's throw him in the pit. So in other words, he feels like he's going along with them to some degree, throw him in the pit, then he can come and get him at a later date and take him back to his father and say, Dad, you know what? We don't really like him because of the way you've treated him, the way we don't really like him, but you know what? Keep him out of the field if you're going to. Send him with a chaperone. He was going to say that. Reuben was going to say that to his father and say, Dad, you know what? If you want this boy, you better do something about it. But he didn't have an opportunity to do it. Again, this is the providence of God. We can see it, step one, step two, step three, and we can see what God is doing. Joseph couldn't. Reuben couldn't. Nobody that was in real time could see what God is doing. What makes you think that you can see what God is doing? What makes you think that you have a right to be able to come against what's happening in your life, no matter how bad it is, no matter how bad they treated you? What gives you the right to say that you're just going to take your ball and go home? How dare we do that? Because what we do, we're responding to what God, it's the question that God is asking us. We're responding in a way that God has laid out all the circumstances in our life, and He says, I know what's best for your life. And it's what you need, Joseph, all of us is Joseph, what you need right now is your brothers to hate you. Lord, how could that possibly be? What you need right now, Joseph, is to be thrown out into a pit. But Lord, I didn't do anything. What you need is all the folks to turn against you, Joseph, and you need that right now. Well, Lord, why do I need that? And when we decide in and of ourselves that I'm not going to take it anymore, what we're doing is we're rebelling against the providence of God. We're saying, Lord, I don't believe all that's necessary. Have you ever heard somebody? I don't believe all that's necessary. That don't make no sense. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to let them do that to me. They ain't doing that to me. All of us have probably had those thoughts. And to some degree, all of us have done it, and the Lord taps on our shoulder and says, Who do you think you are? I'm the one that orchestrated that. I'm the one that had your brothers to turn against you. I'm the one that told Reuben, rather than killing you and just getting you out of the way, I'm the one that had him to put you down in a pit, because I realized that in about 20 hours or 10 hours or 5 hours, there's this band that's going to be coming right by this pit. right down the road, there's something's coming that's got to fit into what my plan is. All right? All right, let's drop down to 23rd verse.
And it came to pass that yes. Joseph was coming to his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat,
yes.
His coat of many colors that was on him.
Yes.
They took him and cast him into a pit.
And
the pit was empty, there was no water.
Yes.
They sat down to eat bread.
Oh, if they did that, they could eat. They had an appetite. After you've done all that dirt, now you're going to sit down and eat as though nothing ever happened. And your brother's down in a pit. You know, some folks don't have the kind of conscience that you think you would have. And Lord help, because you know what? You were probably on the brother's side at one point to somebody. You threw somebody in a pit. Well, we don't call it throwing in the pit. We call them throwing them under the bus or throwing them to the curb. We do that, don't we? And so, and then when we get through, let's go eat. We do it, don't we? And we've been guilty of it. I've been guilty of it. Lord, help us. And we think nothing of it, and we don't even think of how it makes him feel. What was down there? Did he lose all hope? What was the situation that Joseph was going through? I don't know. But he wasn't eating. Not with his brothers. All right, read. They sat down to eat bread. They lifted up their eyes and looked. And behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Judah said unto his brother, what profit is it that we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hands be upon him, for he is our brother after all. He is our brother in our flesh. And his brethren were content. Continue. Then there passed by the Midianites merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph unto Egypt. All right, so here is, again, the providence of God. God has a purpose in what he's allowing to happen in Joseph's life. Now drop down to the 31st verse. They took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of goats and dipped the coat in the blood. They sent the coat of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether this be thy son's coat or no. They knew. All right? And he knew it. He said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. And do you know what? Israel probably felt like it was his fault if I hadn't sent him out there by himself. If I only had, that's my son and I love him. If I only hadn't sent him out there by himself, I should have sent a servant. All these things that their father is going through, and their father just wouldn't be comforted either. They tried to comfort him and he just wouldn't be comforted. And do you see what these individuals, his sons, Joseph's brothers, do you see what kind of pressure they put on their father? But it was God's divine providence that it happens. Let's drop down a little bit more. Do you read 31 and 32? Let's go down. Let's drop and go to the 39th verse. We have to piece this together so it won't be too terribly. 39th chapter and go to the first verse. He was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph. Did Joseph have a bad attitude about it? Did Joseph have a right to be offended? Did Joseph have a right to be upset? Did Joseph have what we might say a right to hold a grudge and to pout and to just have a bad day because of what his brothers did? These are people in the church. We call them brothers and sisters. It shouldn't be among the people of God that this kind of thing happened. It should not happen willingly, but it's going to happen inadvertently. All right? These kinds of things are going to happen in the church inadvertently. So get ready for it. Get braced for it. Do you think that as a minister, nobody has ever offended me? Do you think anybody's ever gotten into my face and told me what I was doing wrong? And do you feel like anybody's ever saying, well, Brother Darrell, you're supposed to be this and you're supposed to be that. And all I see is that, well, you know, does that make me feel, you know what, I have feelings. I hurt too. I have to go and pray. I have to get over it too. And you know why I'm telling you to get over it? Because that's what I've had to do. Get over it. Was it easy? No. But did I do it? Yes. Because you know why? Because I still believe that all things work together for good. And let me tell you, out of all these trials that I've ever gone through, there has been something that the Lord has worked out of me and worked into me. There was something about my character that needed to be changed. There was more of, in some ways, in some things I was very soft. And the Lord began to say, you know what? You're going to have to be strong. You're going to have to stand up in some instances where you're a little shy and you're a little bit this. He had to put some steel in my backbone, so to speak. And so he took me through the trials to do it. And then there were some places that I needed to be soft and I was more rough on the edges. And he said, you need to have more of the love of God here. And so he took me to those kinds of places where people stood against me or whatever, and I had to love them anyway and not show any kind of difference. Now, you suppose that's easy? It ain't no easier for you than it is for me. Just because I'm a preacher doesn't mean that it's easy for me to do. I think you got the wrong idea about preachers. We sat in the pews first. We're human beings. Just like you, the only thing that sets us apart is that we have a gift that the Lord gave me. Well, you have a gift that the Lord gave you that I don't have, probably. So that means we're equal, right? So the same grace that is available to me is available to who? Oh, it's just for preachers. There's a certain kind of a grace that just the preachers go to, and they get to have the grace of God, but everybody else is a privilege. It's a privilege just for us. Is that the way it is? No. You should be just as spiritual as I am, or as you perceive me to be. Or you perceive maybe you think you're more spiritual than I am. That's okay too. But the person that is most spiritual, you should be as spiritual as they are. The most spiritual minister that you've ever seen. There is nothing that says that there is a line that's drawn right here and the ministers have this and the rest of the people have that. We're all on the same level. Lord, help us. All right, now where do we continue reading? Yes? He was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. His master saw the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had, he put in his hand. Now, you know what? Joseph did not allow the circumstances of life and the providence that Lord took him in, he did not allow that to get him down. He said, all right, Lord, this is where I am. I thought I would be where my father is and where my brother is, but I'm going to make the best of what I've got. Now, he looked around and took inventory of what he had. This is what I've got. Now, what am I going to do with it? I'm going to do the very best that I can in this place that God has put me. And what we find is that Joseph excelled everywhere he went. The Lord's hand was on Joseph. And you know, I believe at these particular times, God was testing Joseph, to preparing Joseph for where he was going to take Joseph. But Joseph had to go in incremental stages, one step, and graduate from one grade to the next to see how he was going to react in these circumstances. Do you realize that the Lord allows us to go through terrible circumstances to see how we're going to respond? Not only do you need to know how God needs to know how you respond, so to speak, but you need to know how you're going to respond in it as well. Lord, help us. All right. Let's drop down to the seventh verse.
And it came to pass
after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused, and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wanteth not what is with me in the house. He has committed all that he hath to my hands. There is none greater in the house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. Now this was a a tough woman, wasn't she? Unrelenting, relentless. She was going to get this fellow if it was the last thing that she did. And this man was a man of integrity. Do you know that there are some folks, it may not be in this same kind of situation, but there are some folks that are out to get you. I've come to that conclusion. They're going to get you, and they're going to get you to compromise in some kind of a way if you're not careful. And they have the ability to do it. She probably wasn't a very bad-looking woman. But Joseph understood and knew, I can't do this. I have integrity with me and with God, and I'm not going to do this to my boss, and I'm not going to lower myself to that standard. And he would not do it. The Lord was testing Joseph. And the Lord was wanting Joseph to understand, Joseph, there are going to be some very difficult things that you're going to come against. And there are going to be some things that you're going to have to deal with. And he said, Joseph, I need you to know that you have the power to resist the temptations that are coming against you. The Lord wants us. He's going to allow some things to happen to us. Our weakness, let me tell you, it's not a temptation if there is not a natural weakness there. There is something, you can't be seduced by something that you have, has no attraction to you. So we cannot say that this woman, there was not some attraction that was, potential attraction that was there for Joseph. You understand what I'm saying? Or else he never would have been tempted that way. All right, go.
At 11, and it came to pass about this time that
Joseph went into the house to do his business.
And
there was none of the men in the house with it. Now Joseph probably was just so innocent. And he didn't realize that this was orchestrated. She was in the house, but nobody else was in the house. Now, she's the wife of Potiphar, and she said, y'all go on such and such. You go on such and such. I want you to do such and such. I want you to do this. And she sent everybody out. He comes in, she locks the doors behind him. I'm sure that's what happened. The Bible doesn't say it, but I'm sure that's what happened. You know what? Yeah, we know women, don't we? Sure, that's what happened. All right, she sent them all out, nobody else, and the Lord allowed her to send them out. Again, this is God's providence, testing you as to what's your answer going to be. Joseph, when this comes in, and you, well, I just had to do it. What was a man supposed to do? That's what people say. What was he supposed to do? No, this is the question. The question is, what are you going to do in this situation, Joseph? And Joseph said, oh, this is what I'm going
to
do. All right, read. Came to pass about this time, Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men in the house there within. She caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in his hand and fled and got him out. Oh, coward. Is that what he was? No. Now, the first coat got him in trouble, right? That coat of many colors. Now we got this coat that she pulling off of him. Lie with me. She grabs it. And he just leaves. You want the coat? You can have the coat, but you ain't getting the man. And he runs. That's what the scriptures say, flee fornication. That's what he tells the young folks. Young folks, flee, run from it. It is a power that can grab a hold of you. And one of the things that I can see that young people nowadays, when they have yielded to that kind of thing, it becomes a very difficult thing for them to get out of it. Run from it. Do whatever you have to do, but run from it. All right, read.
And it
came to pass, he left his garment in her hand and was fled for it. She called unto the men of her house and spake unto him, saying, see, he hath brought in this Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto her, me, to lie with me, and I cried with just lying. She should have got an Oscar for that, because I'm sure it was convincing. Just lying. See, and she's got the coat here. You see, he's coming, he's lying with me, and this is his coat. Here's the evidence. Here's clear evidence, and you know what? We know men. And you happen to be a very attractive woman, and I believe what you're saying is true. And we've got the evidence here to prove it. It's his coat. Now we know, now look, let's see. This is Joseph's coat. This is his coat. All right, read.
And it
came to pass. I lifted my voice and cried. He left his garment with me, and he fled, and he got out. She laid up his garment by her until her Lord came home. Spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me, and he fled out. And it came to pass,
when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner that the that his wrath was kindled. Now, here is the situation here, that we've got the coat, and that's just, this is not circumstantial. It's not he said, she said. It is, I've got evidence to prove that this man was in the house. We know that he is in here all the time, and we know that we have this evidence to prove that he's been here. Right? And we know how men are. And his master was angry. His wrath was kindled. Now keep in mind, this is the divine providence of God. Somebody lying on you. Somebody saying things about you that are untrue. And then having the evidence to back it up, enough evidence to back it up, that if they call Joseph in, what's Joseph going to say? Joseph is going to say, no, that is not true. I ran. Now, who are you going to believe? If you're Potiphar, who are you going to believe? Your wife, who you believe to be faithful. If she's that good of an actress, then she's probably got some other things on you as well. You're going to believe your wife, or you're going to believe this little fellow that you just know for the last couple of years or whatever. Who are you going to believe? Lord, help us. All right? So he went to prison. And we know what happened in prison. We won't go through all of that. He was in prison. And what happened in prison? Did he stay on the bottom? Okay, he took an inventory of where he was again. He says, now, you know, I rose up my way up here to this, to Potiphar's house, and now, again, these things keep happening to me, and things just keep happening in reverse. And life is so unfair. Again, he could have complained, couldn't he? Mm-hmm. But what he did is he took an inventory of where he was, and then he said, okay, I'm going to make the best of it. And he began to make the best of where he was, in the prison, right there, when all these bad things that were said about him, all the things that all the rumor mills and all of this, what did he try to do? Did he try to break out and say, you know what? No, you got it wrong. That's not really what happened. But this man was a man that people thought in the prison and everywhere else. You know that little fellow, Joseph? He was over there trying to take Potiphar's wife and whatnot. That went all over the rumor mill. And Joseph in prison did not try to correct any of it, did he? He just took inventory of where he was and he said, all right, I'm going to do the very best that I can where I am. Now, what I want to say to us is, be careful how you judge people. Because you may have it from a good source, what you believe to be a good source, but it is actually you don't have all of the evidence. And when you look at it from the other side, and when you really, the truth, the whole truth, it was the truth that she had his coat, but it wasn't the whole truth. And nothing but the truth. That's why we say that. I'm in real estate, and from time to time, I do manage properties, and from time to time, I have to evict somebody. It's not really something that you like to do, but if you're not paying the rent, then you just can't stay there for free, right? And so you have to go to an eviction court from time to time, and I had to go there. And one time I went there, and it was this judge that was, and this lady was an attractive lady, about the age of the judge. And normally, the plaintiff goes first. So I lay out my case and say, they haven't paid rent for X amount of time. And then the defendant goes and they lay out their case and whatnot. But this little lady was a school teacher. And she was she laid out her case and had pictures and all this thing of what wasn't repaired and all this. And then when the judge got through hearing her, now again, she was the defendant. When he got through hearing her, he slapped down on his gavel and he said, case dismissed. He hadn't even heard my side. So I said, case dismissed. I said, how can you do that? So I didn't realize what I was doing. Well, it needed to be done. I didn't have any qualms about it, but I said, how can you do that? You haven't even heard the other side of the case. How can you dismiss a case and give her the verdict and you haven't even heard my side? I said, you have to hear both sides of the case. And so he said, he got a little bit perturbed with me. So I said, here's the facts. The facts are, on such and such a day, and I laid out my case,
She did not do this. We requested this, and I laid it all out. And you know what he had to do? He had to change his verdict here. Because you had the other side. And you could lay out the other side. So be careful. You know what old folks say, no matter how flat you mash a pancake, there's still two sides. And so if you get one side of a story, and you can have all the evidence and all the coats and all the star witnesses that you want, but you lay out that one side and you don't get the other side, you're going to make some wrong judgments. Lord help us. Just like in this situation, they made some wrong judgments, and it caused this man to have to spend, what, 13 years in jail or so? He had to spend many years in jail for something that he didn't do because the judgment was wrong. Lord help us. Now, this is true. This is just the facts of the case. Now, if you look, listen to this side, and that is why we have those kinds of courts. Right? Lay it all out. You think O.J. Simpson was guilty? You think he did it? No matter what they say, he was the facts. What was this lady down in Florida? Anthony? What was her name? Casey Anthony? I knew she was guilty. I wasn't even following it. But the way everybody was spinning everything, I knew it was going to come out guilty. But sometimes we actually we try the case in the media. And the way the media spins it, I knew Casey Anthony was guilty, as they say, as sin. But she was acquitted. And apparently, and I had to back up off of that, because apparently they laid down the facts of the case, and somebody looked at all the facts of the case, and then they came to the conclusion that this woman is not guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt. Right? Right. God's divine providence and the things that happen to you, the things that are reversals in your life, the times when you have to spend 13 years in jail for something that you didn't do. Do you realize that God is preparing you? He's preparing you to be a savior to somebody. You understand what I say when I'm saving somebody out of something? This is what he was preparing Joseph for. Joseph didn't know that in real time. You don't know that in real time. That's why you don't have a right to take your ball and go home. You can't do that. Because you fail God, and you fail God's people, and you don't know who else you're failing. Do you realize that if Joseph had not done this, then Joseph would have it would have affected all of Egypt. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because Joseph realized that, you know what, I'm just going to make the best of it. My life has been because of what my brethren did to me. My life is just spiraling out of control. And whatever it is, and I'm just so upset I can't even think straight. He could have said that. He could have responded in that way, or he could have done what he did. He said, all right, Lord, I believe that you have control of my life. And because you have control of my life, I'm going to say, even though it's difficult for me in real time to see this, I'm going to say that this is going to work for my good. But it took 13 years. But I'm still going to say that it's going to work for my good. I still am going to say that I am going to have the right spirit, the right attitude. I'm not going to go home. I'm not going to play by myself or get me some new friends. I'm not going to do that. These are the people that you have allowed me to be around and to respond to now. And Lord, I'm going to stay here. And I'm just going to stay here until you do something to bring me out of this place. You know, that's not always easy. But Joseph did that. All right, so we know about the dreams, don't we? We know about the dreams, and we know what happened in the dreams about the baker and the butler and the baker. We won't go into that for the sake of time. And they told him, well, you know what? Joseph said, remember me when you go before the king. Those dreams happen. The Lord still is putting things into place for Joseph. All right? Okay, let's go to 45. Genesis 45, and start at verse 1. We're going to try to bring this to.
And Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that
stood. All right. Now, you know what? You all need to read this story. And just read. I don't have time to read it, and most of us are aware of it, but you know what? If you really read this story, it'll bring tears to your eyes. And just read the history of what Joseph went through. And read about when his brothers came up and he realized that it was his brothers and he could hardly contain himself. And he, you know, this was probably, I don't know exactly how many years had passed by that time, but Joseph was probably in his late 30s, I think, maybe by that time. Maybe 39, 40, something like that. And so from a 17-year-old boy to a 40-year-old man, you look quite a bit different. They didn't know it was him. And to watch what he did and to see how he played it and all that, it's just really a wonderful story. And he put the things back and sent all the money back and they came, his brothers came back and said, you know, we didn't do it. And Joseph, how he was. But this is how Joseph responded to his brothers without them knowing who he was. This is the time where he opens up his identity to them and they're able to see who he was and whatnot. So, and how he responded to the providences of his life. Read. Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brothers, I'm Joseph. Does my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you... But I'm still not bitter at that. I see now that I'm at the end, I see what God was doing. I'm not bitter at what you did, brothers. I'm not bitter at what you did, saints, because I realize that God was preparing me for something much better. He was preparing me for you. If I hadn't gone through this, all of us would be dead right now. But the Lord allowed me to go through all the hard things, you to sell me, you to just throw me to the curb, throw me under the bus. Offend me in all the ways that you did, because it's for my good and for your good. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. All right, read. Now therefore, be not grieved. Don't be angry with yourself that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. I see God's hand in it now. I couldn't see it 13 years. And I was struggling during those times. I was struggling to see how this could ever work for my good. But now I see what God has done. I see what God is doing. Saints, this is what it's all about. This is why God allows us to go through the heartaches and the hardships, and people to talk about us, and people to pull us down, and people to have issues with us. This is why he does it. He's working something in your character where you can restrain and you can be disciplined and you can follow his leading. I believe the Lord whispered to Joseph from time to time, Joseph, it's okay. I got you. I know what's happening in your life. I know this is of me, Joseph. It's of me. And so what you and I have to do, we have to come to, and I have to learn this. And you know how I had to learn it? I had to learn it sometimes. Let me tell you, sometimes folks talked about me so bad that I cried. Sometimes folks did things to me so bad that I cried. But you know what I learned? I learned, Daryl, that's your qualifying. The Lord is qualifying you for something. You are of no benefit to anybody unless you go through these things, and now they come out of you. And this is really what it is about preachers, I believe, because the Lord, the things that we minister to you, we've had to go through these things. And let me tell you, when we go through them, they have more weight than when we just talk about it from an intellectual standpoint. Let me tell you something. I could talk to somebody. Have you ever heard somebody that passed away? Somebody passed away, and you trying to comfort them and console them, but you haven't ever had anybody close to you pass away? And you can say all the right words, but it didn't have the same meaning. And then you have something and you have a mother wrenched away from you, and then somebody else has their mother die, and you can go and you can just hold their hand and you don't have to say anything. But they know that you know. And you know that you know.
And they, maybe you, there's no words for you to express, but that thing that you went through is the very thing that is feeding that person right now. And you know, in the same way, this is what God allows these issues and these problems that we go through. These problems are for our good. They work something in us, and then we go and hold somebody else's hand. Don't say very much to them, but we hold their hand. And we realize and understand, you meant it one way. You did it on purpose, didn't you? He said, but God meant it for good. All right? Read. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. He hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and Lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. And it all started with my father making a mistake of loving me more than he loved you, and making it very plain. And then it was promoted by you being angry and hating me, and you throwing me in a pit. And then you sell it. You're my brother. You're my big brother. You were supposed to protect me. And then we can follow the line of providence. Now, we may not go through anything so dramatic as that, but let me tell you, the things that the Lord is allowing you to go through, they are for the posterity of the church. And you know what grieves me? I see folks falling down all the time. I see folks stumbling, and I'm wanting to say to them, listen, don't you realize that the Lord is the one that allowed this to happen to you? What right do you have to be angry at the pastor? Or at the saints? Or at old brother so-and-so? Or old sister? What right do you have to be angry? If this man had more right than you will ever have to be angry at the church or his brethren. Lord, help us. What if he had just copped an attitude? And what if he had said, you know what? Can't worship with them folks. Can't do it. There's something about them ain't right. What do you mean something about them ain't right? Look, they threw me in a pit. If they loved me, they wouldn't have done that. They sold me. You sold me out. They loved me, they wouldn't have done that. Then all these things that I've had to go through for the last 13 years, I don't have nothing to do with them. I'm going about their business, I'm going about mine. And the Lord was trying to get something over to you all the time. The Lord was trying to work with you to come in and work. Now this brother is in a position to work with his brothers, isn't he? You think his brothers still hate him? You think his brothers had a special place in their hearts for Joseph? Because the only way that we can live is Joseph is the one that's keeping us alive, the man that we hated. So now this has to be turned around. The hatred that they have turns into an appreciation for my brother, the one that was doing all of the damage to me, the one that hurt me so bad. Now I appreciate him because really he's my posterity. He's the one that's keeping me going. If it weren't for him, what would we do? Now, I want to say this to us. The Lord lets you go through what you're going through because ultimately it's going to be for the good of someone. You may not know who it is, and it may not be for the next 10 or 15 years, but it's going to be for somebody's good. And you need to understand and know that there is a such thing as the providence of God. That God is in control, as he was in control of Joseph's life, he's in control of yours as well. And as he was dealing with Joseph and allowed all of the circumstances in Joseph's life to happen to Joseph,
And ultimately, it was brought to this end. Well, why couldn't he have gotten Joseph there in an easier way? That's not my business. You know, sometimes we feel like the Lord should have been able to get us there in a much easier way, but he chose not to. And so whatever way, and what do we say? What does Jesus say? I am the way. So how do we get out of some of these places? The way that Jesus wants us to get out. We follow him in the midst of them. And as we follow him, we realize that these things have happened because God allowed them to happen. And so we're not to be angry and upset about what happens in our lives. Even the worst kind of things that happen, the Lord orchestrated. Those are divine providence. And as we submit to the divine providence of God, there is going to be a response in our heart as to whatever the question is to God is, are you going to be bitter? Are you going to love me? Are you going to still trust me? Are you going to forgive? Are you going to be offended? Or do you refuse? These are the questions that God asks, and our response answers them. And do you know what? We're going to have to give an account of those responses. Pray for me.